I didn't see you there.
Something big is going on here.
From hunting ghosts to Bigfoot,
paranormal, UFOs, true crime, and more.
We won't just be spouting articles.
I was researching for your entertainment.
The beginning of a new world.
The best guac you'll ever fucking eat.
True story.
It's basically like one day you walk outside and you see that the ants are playing with matches.
This is the Black Cat Report. See you on the other side.
In my opinion, belief is one of the most fascinating discoveries you can make when researching the origins of folklore. And while locally, time is known to turn deeply held practices into superstitions and leave traditions without meaning, for the rest of us, distance grants us safety from the evidence of experience, shifting legends into a bastardized pop culture, as is the case with the Strigoi in Romania. Rising from the grave to feed on and drain the life force of those once closest to it, the Strigoi methodically terrorize and kill through mysterious illness, drought, famine, and destruction. Like a plague with a face, the Strigoi bring ruin to entire families, taking lives one by one, night after night, leaving whole towns and villages painted with despair. And it is from these memories, from the tales of those who witnessed the torment of the Strigoi and survived, that we can build a family tree stretching back thousands of years and trace the true lineage of Dracula and the bloodlines of the modern vampire. This week, we're listening to our elders, leaving garlic on our doorstep and cutting the heart out of the creatures whose shadows have been stolen by the night. Join us as we sink our teeth into the history of the Strigoi.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. Whoa.
Spooky.
Welcome, everyone, to episode 49 of the Black Cat Report. My name is Gil, and I'm joined with this evening by my undead co-host, Betsabe.
Hola.
Joey.
It's me, Count Jocula, the jester of the Draculas.
God damn it. And Selena.
Hi there.
Now, I'm going to be honest, sources for this episode are very widespread and will be included in the show notes. I ain't going to list them all.
Take that.
Yeah, internet stuff.
No. Well, now before we dive into the finer details, it's important to make a few distinctions between the Strigoi and vampires. Namely, what is the difference between a Strigoi and a vampire?
Yeah, what
unlike
is
their
the
modern
difference?
Relatives.
We're gonna learn.
We're getting in.
Yeah, I've never even heard of that before.
It's Romanian.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Mm, how cultural of you.
Namely, what is the difference between a Strigoi and a vampire? Unlike their modern relatives, the Strigoi are not a singular type of undead being. While in Romanian, Strigoi simply translates into undead, the term can be used to describe a living person involved in black magic who can actively transform into what is called a Strigoi view. Or it can also refer to an undead human reanimated by a grievance, fate, curse, or even the consequences of their life choices. These are known as the Strigoi mort. And while vampires are often depicted as being seductive, well-dressed bloodsuckers who either decapitate or transform their victims, the Strigoi can range in appearance from an average-looking person to ghoulish, ghostly, or even zombie-like, and they rarely require blood to survive. With all that said, let's dive in.
You!
First recorded by Johann Wichard von Valvasor, please don't make him repeat that name, and published in 1698, our first tale is in fact the very first case of a Strigoi. In 1656, in a small Croatian village called Kringa, Jure Grando, a man known locally for having a rude, vile personality, passed away, leaving his wife widowed and the town, though not explicitly stated, probably slightly relieved. But much to the chagrin of the locals and his newly freed wife, Jure would soon return. Like waiting for the hand of death, over the next 16 years, the villagers of Kringa lived in a routine of fear as every night Jure's undead corpse would stroll through town, approaching a new house, and then knocking loudly on its door. It would soon be recognized that without fail, receiving these knocks always meant one thing. Someone in the house would drop dead within the next few days. But the torment of Yuri's nightly raids wasn't limited to making these foreboding announcements. Before daylight would breach, Yuri, heaving and gasping for breath through an unnatural smile, would appear in the bedroom of his old house, saturating the air with the smell of his rotting flesh. Yuri would then proceed to rape his horrified former wife, taking what he still considered his before finally leaving the terrorized town and returning to his grave. While omens abound and are rarely considered reliable forecasts to anyone but the most faithful, time would pass, and officials would be forced to recognize the growing rumors of death knocking on the town's doors. One such official, Giorgio, the village priest, would eventually connect the dots between the growing whispers of a corpse predicting death and the ravings of a sleepless widow claiming nightly incursions by her former husband. The very man Giorgio had laid to rest nearly 16 years earlier.
Wait, are we sure it just wasn't the priest going over there and then raping her and then being like, I think it was, it's Strigoia. Yeah, that's what it was. It's just Strigoia. Yeah.
Hey, maybe it became a great excuse later. Also, I think she was a little bit too old for a priest's taste sexually. But that's just my opinion and history. anyways,
when the moment to act finally came, the priest stood in wait on the corpse's nightly path. Hours would grow and pass into the silence of the early morning before, just as he expected, Giorgio began to hear a loud gasping between footsteps starting to approach. Once the corpse of the grinning Yuri got within a few feet, Giorgio sprang out in front of him, cross in hand, shouting, quote, "Behold, Jesus Christ, Eustergone! Stop tormenting us!" Shocked by the biblical ambush, Yuri's face filled with tears and he ran off into the night.
Isn't this in Croatia?
Yeah, but I still like to picture him as like a Southern Baptist preacher because it's just...
Be gone, Strigoia.
Strigoia.
It is so much.
Get gone, beef stroganoff.
Yep. Get on out of here.
Go on, get.
Well.
Get.
Now, as a side note, while there have been tons of references for thousands of years all over the world to creatures and entities fitting the description of a vampire, this moment, when Giorgio calls Yuri a Strigone, though a little corny, is in fact the earliest recorded use of the literal word vampire. This is why this is so significant. Well, surprisingly, somehow, I don't know how it could possibly have happened, but somehow the hopes and prayers of Giorgio didn't stop Yuri's reign of terror in Kringa. I know. I'm shocked, too. So after the people of the town gave the church a chance to find...
I mean,
seriously, though.
I'm not shocked. This is like... Yeah, of course, this story, you know?
Yes. But this is... You'll see at the end of this why that moment was so significant. Not just for the name drop. The first name drop, which is really confusing because he literally just made up a word...
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. But the first name drop, like why that moment is so significant in vampire history. But anyhizzle.
So after the people of the town gave the church a chance, only to find death's promise still coming nightly, a man by the name of Miho Redick decided to put an end to this town's undead burden. Yes, his name is literally Miho. Miho rallied a small group of local villagers and set out into the night, eventually hunting down Yuri and attempting to stab him in the chest with a branch made of hawthorn. It didn't work. The branch wouldn't penetrate Yuri's skin, and in the confrontation, all that would happen is Yuri would slip away and scurry off into the night, stick-wielding vigilantes pissed off, shaking their fists.
Why all the...
So the next day, a new plan of attack was made, and that night, a hit squad of 9 men, including the priest Giorgio, And the guys from the previous night, who I guess technically count as the first official vampire hunters, set off to finish the job.
Little this van. Is so this ridiculous. Time. Like, well, what this in is the world?
Little Van Helsing's over there.
That's what I was going
to
say.
For real. Mm-hmm. Well, this time they went straight to the town cemetery and dug up the coffin of Yuri Grando. Once open, the men stepped back in shock. Though it had been 16 years since his death, Yuri appeared to be sleeping peacefully, grin on his face, and no signs of decomposition. Stepping forward, the priest yelled out more commands from God and made several failed attempts to lunge another stake made of hawthorn into Yuri's chest. He then tried to do a quick exorcism on Yuri before making even more failed attempts with the wooden stake. Well, at some point, after watching what had to have looked like a group of uncles trying to get a stuck lug nut off of a car wheel. Let me try. Nope. God damn it. Let me try. Nope. God damn it. One man, Stepan Milasic, said, "Let me try." He then walked up to the coffin, pulled out a saw, and started trying to cut off Yuri's head.
Jesus,
that's not
Christ.
What they were doing. He said, "Let me try," and he just did something else.
Yes.
He was like, "Yes, excuse me. I have the perfect tool to get that stake in his heart."
Go through his neck.
So
just gotta saw this motherfucker off.
Everybody knows the way to a vampire's heart is through its goddamn neck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, legend has it that on the first cut, Yuri's eyes shot open and he let out an ear-splitting scream before blood started gurgling from his mouth. His stipend kept sawing further and further into his neck until finally his head was removed. After this act of desecration, Yuri never again roamed the village streets. The town finally found peace, and from this moment on, decapitating the head became one of the go-to solutions for anyone terrorized by Istragore.
I would imagine that would stop anybody.
Yeah.
Go for the head.
Is it Team America, World Police? Or what the hell is that movie where they're like, oh, they're powerless without their heads.
I
can't. It might have been Mars Attacks. I don't remember.
Yeah,
but like,
I think
there's some movie
been.
That just brilliant. It's so brilliant where they're just like, oh, they're powerless without their heads. That was literally this moment. Yeah. Joey's looking it up. Joey?
Yep. Keep going.
What do we got?
He's probably watching football right now.
Oh, it's Scary Movie 3.
Oh,
that's what it was. Yes. Another genius piece in cinematic history.
Is it though?
Hashtag winning.
It is. It really is. The Wayans brothers are the shit. Like, full respect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Well, other than the use of the word strigon, right? Which over in Croatia, it's same word as strigoi. It's vampire. It's the closest damn thing, like, in linguistic history to the word vampire was the first use. Other than the use of the word, this story solidified so much of what will later become canon in the legends of vampires, right? And so the more that I read about this, the more that it started to dawn on me, I was like, wow, these seemingly comedic moments, honestly, really did just grow over the next 400 plus years into what we now understand as the legend of the vampires. Sleeping in a coffin during the day, only coming out at night, never aging or decomposing, sexual lust, even the less significant moments would go on to become exaggerated and evolve into having deeper roles in vampire mythology. For instance, the reaction Yuri had to Giorgio confronting him with a cross. When it happened, Yuri just started crying before scurrying away, but this moment in the story mutated over time and has grown to include a whole realm of legends behind it. The shriek of terror when somebody holds up a cross to a vampire, burning them with holy water, the belief that a vampire can't set foot on hallowed ground like going into a church, the archetype of a vampire hunting priest, all of these things came from this moment. Even the use of a wooden stake, It literally never worked, but this part of the story has become a stereotype. I can't even count the number of times in movies where I've seen someone break the leg off of a chair and sharpen it before fighting a vampire. Like, that's just a thing that always happens in vampire movies.
And if you watched Buffy at all, she literally has like a pack full of just wooden stakes.
It is. Like, this is such a thing, but like these comical moments grew like that, right?
Well, to be fair, the branches weren't sharpened. So they were just
when he was saying that they couldn't get it. Yeah.
It's like they were just poking him with the wood.
I was imagining like just a flat on both sides piece of wood, and they're like, it's just not going in, guys. And guys, like, just on. Like crying.
they're like literally like they're like holding the branch sideways trying to shove it into his chest to think like, why won't this work?
Yep.
Just slapping him with it. Well, all of this stuff, the religious symbolism and like how that would evolve, the stereotype of the priest that's hunting vampires, what is it, I think it's the Lost Boys where it's like a super soaker filled with holy water, like, you know, like all of these things just compounded from this moment in the mid 1600s, right? And it's just, to me, that's absolutely fascinating. Yeah. Like finding that moment in history where everything evolved and spiraled from.
Every time I think of the Lost Boys, I'm just like, it reminds me of like, they're like, oh, you like eating maggots, when they got him like white rice. And then it makes me think of What We Do in the Shadows, where they feed them spaghetti.
Paschetti.
And they're like
some basketti.
They're like, you like eating worms? And then like everybody freaks out. And then the new vampire tries to do it to them with French fries. And they're like, it just works with things that already kind of look like worms. What are you doing?
That's funny.
God, I fucking love What We Do in the Shadows.
Yeah. Two great movies, Lost Boys and Living in the Shadows.
Well, this all brings us to the original legends surrounding the Strigoi. They have a tail covered in long hair, horse hooves for feet, a large mouth, and hairy hands. They can transform, not just into bats, but any number of animals, including rabbits, wolves, dogs, cats, owls, rats, and cockroaches.
I'm sorry, the first...
Along with regular... What's that?
That first description just sounded like a fucking horse.
Yeah, a little bit. Low-key.
It's like horse. A horse is a Strigoi.
Could be.
Ooh, spooky. He can also be a bunny.
Or horse-goy.
Spooky horse or spooky bunny.
A horse is a horse, of course, unless he is a Strigoi.
So is this thing like not human? Like,
it's like undead.
It's undead.
So like a zombie.
Or a vampire.
Kind of. It's so, and we're about to like dig into this a little bit when we get into the types of Strigoi.
Oh my god,
but
types.
I think. Oh yeah, no, there's types. There's like a whole there's a whole catalog. And this is what's interesting is so like, or at least to me, was going through the types and learning about the different types of Strigoi, I realized how like Bram Stoker, when he created Dracula, he went through and cherry picked, right? The different ways that they attack, the different ways that they appear, the like behavior, all these different things. He went through and cherry picked all the different types of these entities that existed for hundreds and thousands of years before he wrote Dracula. And he was like, and a little bit of you, and a little bit of you, and a little bit of you, and put them all together. That is a vampire. So like what we see as the modern vampire has an incredibly long, complex history of like a multiplicity of beings, right? It's almost like if you took all of the Greek gods and put them into one and then said that they were born on Christmas, and then you proceeded to have Easter because they got resurrected. Oh, wait, that's Christianity. But, like, it's kind of like that, but with a monster.
Yeah, I mean, right? You got your different types. You got your Edwards. You got your Blades. You got your Tom Cruises.
Got your Blades.
You know? You got all the different kinds of vampires out there that you're kind of
Brad
just,
Pitts.
You know? And whether you're Team Tom, your Team Brad, your Team, you know, Edward, you know? Yeah. Just
Team Edward.
Yep.
Yeah.
We don't support Jacob here, though.
Wait, I just want to point out, Edward has been a vampire for, like, thousands of years, and in their house, they have, like, a thing of all the high schools he's graduated, and I'm just saying, why the fuck would you go to high school for 1,000 years?
Yeah,
why not?
Because it's went to the fucking wrong school. Hell!
I mean, he explains it too, because like
he's like, yeah, just like picking up underage chicks.
No, it's
you know what they say about high school girls. He's literally the guy from that movie. You know what they say about high school girls?
He's Matt McConaughey from Dazed and Confused,
and they stay the same age. Yes, they do. Yes, they do.
He should have said that.
That is Edward Cullen.
I know. I know he should have said that, but no, it was just like an inside joke for them. Like, I mean, what else are they going to do?
Hang out with adults?
I don't know. They've had thousands of years to figure that out.
With adults, possibly?
I mean,
yeah,
high school kids, and I mean, he never like dated anyone else. Like, he never, that Bella.
This
was,
is on video, Beth. Be very careful what you say next.
So he didn't date any other minors, but when he did, he got her pregnant, but also told her that he wanted to eat her. So it was kind of abusive and not really safe for her. And also, we know that he didn't date anyone because he says so, but we're going to believe him.
That is true. We should not believe men when they say it's always actions and not words.
Well, anybody.
So.
Yes, anybody.
Okay. I've literally spent the past like week and a half just like going through and like just finding the most obscure content online of like photocopied books that were in like borderline ancient, like Romanian and Austrian and Croatian, and like using that to like use like an optical character recognition software to identify the letters, so then I could run it through like Google Translate, and then I could go through and like correct the text and figure out like what is the fucking origin, what is the fucking like birth of the goddamn modern vampire. I want the placenta on my face, like show me when it fucking happened. Like, I've been digging. All right.
You should just watch Twilight.
Damn, right? Yeah, no, I've been fucking in there. And then Twilight came up, and I'm like, oh, man, the whole time I was just like, push that thought out of your head, Gil. That's not going to happen. These people respect history. But hey, you know
what? Hell no, it's all about Twilight.
Just kidding.
Hey, Twilight was made long enough ago that it is part of history.
Yeah, that's right.
Ask all the millennial women.
You're right, and I just found myself ashamed of history. So
I mean, they go pretty deep into like even the natives, you know, like the whole wolf thing. That's history.
Bella, where have you been, loca?
Loca. History.
It's history. All right. Don't know where the fuck we were, but let's get back in. All right. So, as I said, they can transform not just into bats, right? But any number of animals, including rabbits, wolves, dogs, cats, owls, rats, cockroaches, along with regularly targeting specific parts of their own family. And this is something that separates them from the way that we generally view vampires. A strigoi will regularly attack members or sections or areas of its own family almost exclusively, right? They do this along with tormenting towns by causing wheat crop failures, emptying fruit from orchards, and I've read enough accounts of them by now to confirm this, stealing the feet off of cows.
It's their equivalent.
I have
to
no
shoes,
clue what that means,
because they have hooves. They're like, ooh, damn.
How do you steal the foot off of a cow?
Brown cow stunning.
You do like that one guy did, and you take a hacksaw to it, and you just hack off them legs.
Well, actually, they just gnaw on it. They go, nya, 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 nya.
Oh, true. They could bite him.
All the other stuff makes sense, though, right? If you're...
What if they're just very strong and if you're coming at and chop it off with their hands?
It's a blade Strigoi. It just comes in with a sword. But, like, all the other stuff makes sense to me because, like, you know, if you're having bad shit happen back in the 1600s, 1700s, 1800s, whatever, and you're like, God damn, Strigoi came in town and fucked shit up, you know? It's like the crops failed, there was a drought, you know, hail, any number of things. You'd blame that. But, like, how many times did the feet of people's cows go missing that became part of the legend of what Strigois do? Because it's shit happens and people would say that's a Strigoi. If you don't believe in them, then it's like something happens. They're like, it must have been the Strigoi last night. Were cows' feet going missing? Like, what?
Maybe.
Does this need to be an episode? I'm confused.
They'd like go out to check on the horses early in the morning and see that they're wearing dress shoes and they're like, huh, something's wrong. And then they go and check and they're like, where are your feet? And they're human feet instead.
Whoa.
Goddamn, Betsy.
Strigois.
You were going to be the shoe model that helped us raise up in the family and become famous. What are we going to do now?
Those poor cows.
How is our Only Cows account going to make it without these foots?
Only Cows.
They are addicted to sex and can cause their hypnotized victims to go mad with obsession. They avoid garlic, onions, and incense, so they live in fear of Italian hippies. They are most active and dangerous on two specific nights out of the year. The eve of St. Andrew's Day, which is the Romanian winter solstice, November 30th, and on the spring equinox. On these nights, the Strigoi are said to come out and gather in a sort of undead fight club kind of situation where they beat the shit out of each other with everything from wooden bats to swords. The victor of this unholy rumble receives the honor of getting to do the most harm to the village they torment.
Hell yeah.
Another fascinating aspect of the Strigoi is that there are a wide range of types. The shrieking Strigoi, who call out the name of the one they want to kill. If the person answers, they will die within a few days. A common belief about these types of Strigoi is that they can only yell out their would-be victim's name once, which has led to it becoming common practice, even to this day, that if somebody yells your name, you should never answer the first time.
Go.
The knocking Strigoi. They can only knock once. If someone responds by asking, say, who's there, or opens the door, then that person will die within the next few days. The famished Strigoi, who, like a serial killer with a victim type, craves eating a certain type of person, such as, say, little girls, young men, etc. The burden Strigoi, found in the forest or near the edge of a river, they live trapped in a specific area until they are able to climb onto someone's back and get carried out. Once they are free, the one who carried them will soon die, and the Strigoi will then wreak havoc on the town it was taken to. The nightmare Strigoi attacks people in their sleep by either ripping out their stomach, crushing them, or suffocating them. A famous version of this involves children who have died who, if they come back as Strigoi, will sit on top of the chest of their parents trying to suffocate them in their sleep.
That's normal, I guess.
Yeah.
I imagine that the knocking Strigoi would be really shitty knock-knock joke tellers. Because they'd just be like, knock. And the person would just
There's
be waiting
no
the whole time, just being like, knock-knock, waiting for the knock-knock.
That's hilarious.
So
yeah, no one's going to say who's there.
Yeah, yeah. They're just waiting. Unless they're just, you know, the Romanians are just terrible in jokes, and they're just like, knock. Who's there? Oh, dang it, not again. God damn it.
Also, can we go back? This month.
Yeah.
Can we go back to the fact that they are addicted to sex? Because How can they be addicted to sex if they're basically dead? And the fact that they don't have feelings.
Rigor mortis.
Well, yeah, well, it's like a supernatural being. So like they're able to walk around as if they're alive and stuff like that. And just like that story that we heard about that guy that terrorized this town for 16 years, like he raped his wife regularly when he was, you know, above ground, you know, being a Strogoi.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like it doesn't have anything to do with like feelings or anything like that. And like, if you meant like physical feelings, then I think they are able to have physical feelings, because when that guy cut off his head, he opened his eyes. He realized something was going on. So
yeah,
I hope that answers your question.
That's a
thank you, Selena. God.
And I no, that's like a, that is a really good question, because it kind of brings me to something that like I've been having a very hard time understanding, but honestly I found is like one of the most fascinating things researching this case, which is that in Eastern Europe for a long time before Christianity kind of like came in and was like, hey, fuck all your pagan holidays, this is that new shit, we're just going to move it a day ahead or a day behind and relabel it as something that involves a saint. Mm-hmm. Right. It used to be common belief in large areas of Eastern Europe, where Romania is, where Transylvania is, the home of Dracula, right, that people had two souls. And that to me is like, it's so underwhelming when you first hear it. But then when you stop to think about it, at least for me, it was just endlessly fascinating, right? The mechanics behind having two souls. I've never come across any beliefs, any cultures, right? Any religious systems where they actually believe a human being has two separate souls, two distinct souls existing within their body. It's always one. Every single time, it's always you have one soul that's just with you, you die, and it goes on to whatever form of afterlife or non-afterlife or gets reincarnated or something like that. But it's always one. I've never come across a belief system where it has two. Mm-hmm. And from what I've been able to understand, and I don't, you know, make the claim to have an understanding of an entire system's intricacy, right, is that in the waking life, you have a soul that's completely independent from you. That's not your personality. It's a completely separate life that leaves when you go to sleep at night and has its own goddamn life. Like, literally, you have a soul that leaves when you go to sleep and has its own experiences, its own life. And then when you die, there's a separate soul. Not that first one that then goes on to whatever afterlife. And I do want to make a distinction here, too. I feel like Selena might have been throwing up a finger on this. There is two-spirit belief, right? In many of the First Nations belief systems in the United States, this is completely separate. Like, this is not saying that you embody whatever a culture might view as masculine and feminine, right? In terms of traditional roles and yada, yada, yada around genders. This is, no, literally two separate souls doing two separate things that exist within your body. And so for Strogoi V, right, for the living Strogoi, that is the dream version of somebody that can be controlled and sent off into the world when somebody transforms into a Strogoi. But for the Strogoi Mort, right, that is when somebody dies and they become a Strogoi. That is the Strogoi that is the undead, that's almost like a zombie, right? And that is the spirit that comes about or exists when you die, that is supposed to go on to an afterlife. I don't know. The mechanics behind this are fucking insane, and they're so foreign to my understanding of how the world is supposed to work in life and afterlife. But if anybody listening to this knows anything about duality of souls, right, the system behind it, seriously, hit us up, contact@blackcat.report, or hit us up on Instagram @blackcatreport. Super easy to find us, but I am incredibly fascinated and I have not had enough time to dig into it. Well, with that said, enough about all that. Let's get to another tale. This one a little more recent, and to be honest, in my opinion, deserving of its own episode. You see, We dig into and research these cases up to the moment we record, each one like a weekly obsession. And in this case, I discovered old books photocopied and published online that I've been running through Google Translate. Now, maybe I'm just geeking out here, but what I'm about to tell you is fucking crazy. And I want to know, do you want us to do an episode about it? If so, stick around to the end and I'll tell you how to vote in a secret poll. Okay, now let's dive in. So unlike Yuri, Estragoy Mort, who became transformed after his death, our next case involves a young girl from Romania, 12-year-old Eleonora Zugan. While Eleonora does not fit the typical description of a modern vampire, she does fall squarely into the profile of a Strigoi view, one who is gifted with Strigoi powers by the devil and transforms while still alive. Now, what's interesting about Eleonora's story is not only when it happened, but how well documented it was. As legend goes, in 1925, the Romanian village of Talpa had a bit of a situation on their hands. A child from the village, Eleonora, suddenly had objects floating around her. But this wasn't just a one-off event, though. It kept happening and would ultimately lead to the villagers labeling her a, quote, tool of the devil. In response, they locked her in a shed, sentencing her to starve to death alone. But by the time the sentence was served, word of the young girl had already spread to other towns and had reached the ear of one Wasilico Saraseki, an Austrian countess who just happened to have been traveling through the area. The countess, who had a love of all things occult and paranormal, quickly traveled to the village and made a deal with the people. If they released Eleonora, she would adopt her and take her back to Vienna. To the relief of literally everyone involved, they agreed. In an almost Disney-like kind of movie scenario, Eleonora started a new life in Vienna as an official member of Austrian royalty. This shit's fucking insane to me.
Wow.
Right? Well, it would be here, under the curious and caring watch of Countess Wasilico Saraseki, that both paranormal investigators and scientists would study the claims surrounding Eleonora. This brings us now to the accounts of Harry Price, a ghost hunter from England who made the trip to Austria just to investigate the young girl's powers. He wouldn't be disappointed. During his first visit with Eleonora, Harry watched as the toy he brought her as a gift broke itself in front of everyone while no one was touching it. Then, before the shock of this wore off, witnesses watched as a knife levitated off of a table and then darted through the room, narrowly passing Harry's head before lodging itself into a wood door behind him. After that, seemingly random objects, both big and small, began lifting off of the ground, moving around the room, and smashing into the walls.
That's crazy. Wow.
This is fucking nuts. Crazy. I'm sorry. This is fucking
That's like an evil Matilda.
Mm-hmm.
I know, right?
Matilda could have used her powers for evil.
Well, clearing up any doubt he may have had, this first meeting with Eleonora would end with Harry making an arrangement with the Countess. In short time, Harry would be in charge of regularly testing and studying the young girl's powers in the Countess's official laboratory. Again, she was all about this shit, you know, before this happened. She found or she heard about the girl and quickly like rushed to the village to see what was up, saw the way they were treating her and was like, no, like she's special. I'll straight up adopt her. Mm-hmm. I will adopt her and take her away from you. And all the villagers are like, please, we technically don't want to kill little girl, but she's evil as fuck. Please take her away. And the little girl just like straight up went from a situation of like, what's all this shit floating around me, to, oh no, I'm being locked into a shed to die, to, I guess I'm basically a princess now.
Like, yeah, that's crazy.
This is a crazy. This is, I like to imagine this is over the course of like 12 hours. This is the most Disney situation you can imagine. Mm-hmm.
If that like, happened to me, up. I would be so scared that like I had actually died.
Mm-hmm.
And that I was like, this was like not real.
Yeah, this is your dream. Your,
like, just some beautiful soul. Austrian, like, royalty woman. Just like, come here, sweetie. I'm taking you away from all this. I'd be like, oh, shit, I died.
Right. This is technically how all the Christmas stories start. The Christmas Hallmark movies start.
Yeah. No, that's wild.
This is, the documents I found after writing this portion of the script, like, she adopts an official royal title. Like, she straight up, historically, does become a part of Austrian royalty.
Dang.
This is real. And, like, I've found parapsychological, like, magazines from, like, the early 1900s on archive.org and a number of other websites where the folks that I'm talking about here are writing reports back to England and saying, this is what happened this week. This is what we tested. This is what we studied. Like, there was so much behind Eleonora, right? This fucking happened. And this is, I don't know. This is a rabbit hole that I was like, I don't have time to go down, but holy shit, this sounds insane. Like,
yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah, it definitely needs its own episode.
It does. It does. In my opinion, it does. But, well, during this research, it would be documented that Eleonora was not only gifted with advanced abilities in the realm of telekinesis, but also regularly covered in strange red marks and bites that would seemingly just appear out of thin air. Hmm. When asked where the marks came from, Eleonora would reply, quote, "The bites are the work of the devil." And that was it.
Hmm. I mean, that's she's terrifying. Just straight up, like, on point.
She's like 12, wow. And she's just like, they ask her, and she's just like, it's the devil.
It is what it is.
It is what it is.
This is nuts.
Yeah, that's crazy.
This is wild.
It's the devil.
It's the devil. Anyways, block, 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 train, train, train. You know, just playing.
Yeah.
Now, as promised, if you want to hear more about Eleanor, and I really hope you do, here's how you can vote. From today, Sunday, June 4th, 2023, and going until Wednesday, June 7th, 2023, you can go to this episode's page on Spotify. Once there, you'll see a poll asking, should the case of EZ get a full episode?
Obviously, yes.
Get 10 votes for yes. If we get 10 votes for yes by Wednesday night, we'll do it. If we don't, well, we'll throw it into the giant box that we have of maybes. Let us know.
Let us know.
I want to hear more.
Anyways.
Yeah, I'll be voting 10 times. Yes, yes.
it's up to our listeners. All you got to do, hit up Spotify. I'll have the poll on there. Click yes. Got like basically 3 days. Just need 10. That's all I want. Well, that said, let's move on to our last case. This one involving a subject that no tale of vampires would be complete without, and that is Strigoi hunters.
Mm-hmm.
As to be expected, for as long as there have been Strigoi terrorizing communities, there has also been those who rise up and fight back, some even making it a profession. This brings us now to the well-publicized case of a body being desecrated in Romania only 19 years ago.
Mm.
You see, in late 2003, a 76-year-old man by the name of Petre Toma was riding home on his horse-drawn carriage through rural Romania after what witnesses describe as a long night of drinking. At some point on his journey home, the intoxicated man fell off his seat and was crushed by the hooves and wheels of his horse-drawn carriage. After a short period of time, Peter Toma was laid to rest in a local cemetery, or at least that's what locals had first thought. So, soon after Pietre's passing, his sister began experiencing extreme weight loss from an unknown disease, as well as an intense series of night terrors, regularly screaming out, quote, "He's on top of me, he's eating me, he's killing me." Her symptoms grew so extreme and so detrimental that her husband, Pitre's brother-in-law, reached out to a sheep herder who lived on the edge of town, a 67-year-old man named Mirka Mitrisa. Sorry, y'all. Doing my best I can. doing the best I can. Mirka was well known in the area for being skilled in the old ways, educated in the methods of dealing with the types of phenomenon the family had grown to suspect. A strigoi. By the time of his arrival at their home, it was early 2004, and the afflicted woman's condition had only been growing worse. It was obvious to all those present that the time to act was now. So, after a long night of drinking, the men of the household took off towards the local cemetery. Once they arrived, they dug up the grave of Pitre Toma, opened the casket, and discovered a body not only showing few, if any, signs of decomposition, but a small trail of blood dripping from the edge of his mouth. At the sight of this anomaly, Mirka lifted a pitchfork and struck into the chest of the corpse, cutting through the ribcage and revealing the still beating heart of Pitre.
Whoa.
He then proceeded to cut the heart loose from the body, fill the coffin with cloves of garlic, and bring the heart to the nearest crossroads in town where he burned it until it was just a pile of ash. After this, he took the ash back to the family's house, mixed it with water, and gave it to the sickened woman to drink.
Ugh.
I know.
She did. And within days, her illness was gone, and the family finally felt at peace.
Ugh.
What was that?
I think disgusting. That's what he said. That's disgusting.
Yeah, it's literally like hard ash tea. That's what happened.
Ew. The Hardashians.
Well, people are sick.
Speaking about the Hardashians. Well, the story doesn't end there. After a close family member received news of Pitre's body being dug up and torn apart, she contacted the town's local authorities. Once they arrived, they quickly confirmed her worst fears. Pitre's body was completely decapitated, his chest was torn open, and the entire coffin was filled with garlic. This case quickly went to trial, and the parties involved were charged with up to 6 months in prison for the desecration of a body. But during trial, something happened. Not only did everyone involved completely own up to their actions, stating that they wouldn't hesitate to do the exact same thing again if needed, but citizens of the town spoke up, stating that they also witnessed the torment caused by the strigoi and that they too supported the actions of the men on trial. By the time the case was over, the defendants were released with no jail time, just a small fine, and renewed a tradition which would take hold all throughout the area to stake the heart of everyone laid to rest on the day of their funeral.
That's messed up.
Jeez.
And this is now the current practice, the current tradition, the current reality for sections of Romania who deal with the strigoi. It's up to you to decide if this is folklore. But for me, I'm a little bit on the fence. These folks 100% believe it. I've watched hours of babushkas just talking about what they've been dealing with since they were kids.
No.
And I kind of always have a hard time like looking at somebody in their eyes when it's person after person. And they just say, like, this is what I experienced. This is what I went through. And that's the only kind of, like, off-the-wall thing that they would say to you, you know? Mm. I don't know. Let us know. But it's just as legit as anything else.
Yeah. I just got the image once you said that, like, it's common practice now to do that to everybody. Just imagine, like, at the open casket, they're like, all right, say goodbye to grandma. And just...
stake to the heart.
She's never coming back now.
And then Bon Jovi,
shot to the heart, and you're to blame. Oh, you gave garlic a bad name.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
She's trippy though, because like we have to picture that like part of the world, like a fair section of the global population. Straight up believes, right, that they deal with this on a regular basis, that this is 100% reality, changing their life, changing the way they react to their own name, the way they answer their door, the way, like, everything around it is just like, no, don't do that, down to burial rituals, which are a major part of Strigoi lore. Like, so much of Strigoi lore is basically like the person wasn't buried properly, right? I wasn't going to get into the very, very long and convoluted details of like burial tradition, because in any culture, it's very long and very convoluted. But in Romania, if you fuck up at any point, basically you got a vampire on your hands. You have a Strigoi coming back to town being like, you fucked up, homie, time to kill some motherfuckers, right? And so now, in modern times, in the areas of Romania where they still believe in Strigoi or deal with Strigoi, however you want to view it, it's become common practice once the modern world has mixed with the old beliefs to just ceremoniously, like, maybe drive a stake through their heart on the day of their burial so that you don't have to go back and dig a motherfucker up and do it and piss off the whole family that like their body has been like dug up and left out in the cemetery. It's just like, no. It's gonna final touch here and tink. All right, cool. Put him down in the ground. Right. That's how strong it is. And so I guess I got to ask the question is like, at what point when a large enough number of people believe and take actions towards something, is there likely something, maybe not exactly what they believe, but something there? I don't know.
But first thought,
it's interesting.
First thought that comes to mind is racism, and I'm like, no, there's nothing there.
Yeah, no, it's literally just Romanians talking about Romanians. I mean, I don't know. There was nothing.
I meant the idea. Like, if so many people, you said if so many people have this belief, like, you know, how can we say that there's nothing there? But like in racism, a lot of people have the same beliefs, but there really isn't anything there.
Yeah. Totally. And that's 100% legit, right? That's 100% legit. But it does build a topic. It does build a question. It does build something that becomes a conversation regardless of what side you fall on. It's like, well, this is something that we're dealing with at this point, right? And like the fact that, you know, there's been so many accounts back to biblical days, Proverbs 30:15, where like if you look at modern translations of the Bible, it straight up references a vampire. Right. I don't know. Maybe there's a gang of 90-year-old babushkas that are totally saving us from hell flowing over. Who knows? All I'm saying is shit's wild. And thank you to that entire culture and that entire history for giving us Dracula and vampires, which we all know are the cats of the paranormal world.
Peace. Thank you for listening to the Black Cat Report and our episode on the Strigoias. Please like, review, and follow us wherever you get your podcasts. Gil and I are working on a new show released weekly called What the F, and it'll be starting here on the Black Cat Report Network here in a few weeks. Stay tuned for some updates on our Insta and our podcast. We'll see you next week with another episode on the other side.